This one's good if it goes.
Oh, dude! Oh, goodness!
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go!
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you gotta hope for a dramatic three.
Oh, boy!
Oh, they got it!
Jones!
Oh,
yes! Oh,
I can't believe it! I can't believe it! Are you serious?
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome back. The college basketball season is over. I believe the best team wins. Seth Greenberg, Dan Dukich, it's Courtside. But before Seth, I must give a shout out. I'm wearing my NCAA t-shirt today. The easiest group in the world to criticize is the NCAA. You can just say the NCAA stinks and you'll get 3,000 more followers on Twitter. But you got to give them credit, and I will. You got to give Mark Emmert and his entire crew, the basketball committee, credit. Seth, a lot of people did not think we'd have a season. We did. A lot of people didn't think we should have Champ Week. We did. A lot of people didn't think the NCAA tournament was going to go off. It did in glorious fashion and concluded with a Final Four that – actually, a Final Two that represented our sport very well. Well done, NCAA. Well done, NCAA Men's Basketball Committee. Great job. Congratulations to all of you. Now clean the damn women's thing up. Get that tournament where it should be. Give it, put it on equal footing. But what a great job you all did with the men's basketball tournament.
No, I totally agree. Dan Gavitt, think about it. They put that thing together in 3 months. It usually takes a year. I mean, moving locations, figuring out hotels, figuring out how to feed the teams, figuring out testing, figuring out protocol. To get that all figured out in a three-month period in a safe environment, as uncommon as it was, in a lot of ways, excluding VCU. And I feel for those kids at VCU. I feel for Mike Rhodes. I feel for how hard they worked all season long. They were a very terrific team. To have that taken away from you. But it was the right thing to do, unfortunately, because you couldn't take a chance. I feel for the officials that lost an opportunity that got the virus or got contact tracing. And I don't want to mention names because I'm not sure about privacy. But one of those officials got really sick, one of the best officials in college basketball, one of the greatest guys in college basketball, someone I have so much respect for. When he was on one of my games, man, I knew one thing, coach your team, because I didn't have anything else to worry about. And just an incredible, incredible job and an incredible tournament. Think about what do you want in a great tournament? You want early round upsets. We get Oral Roberts, we get Abilene Christian. But then you want kind of intriguing games. And we got them all along the way. You know, whether it was early in the tournament, whether it was Wisconsin, North Carolina, opposites attract. Well, North Carolina kind of maybe even hold the flag for the quote unquote blue bloods. You had the obviously Abilene Christian, Texas game. We got games all over. Then we had the team like Houston, who made its way all the way to the Final Four. All right. I mean, on rebounding and defense and toughness. So, but in the end, we all wanted one versus two. In the end, we all wanted to see Gonzaga and Baylor. In the end, that historic offense got beat by rebounding, defense, and three-point shooting. And you know what? If you think about it, was part old school, part new school. Here's my take on the thing. We'll go through this whole game. The first play of the game, Baylor shoots it. They rebound it. Baylor shoots it. Bam, they rebound it. Baylor shoots it again. Bam, they rebound it. That was it. It sounds crazy, but that was like, wait a second. We're just different. We are going to come at you. We are going to be relentless. That thing is going to go on the glass, and we are going to attack it. We're bigger, stronger, quicker, and quite honestly, tougher. I really believe that if those two teams play 10 times, Baylor would win 8.
I didn't believe that going in. And one last thing on the tournament. My state and my city, Indianapolis, the Marion County Health Commission, the Tippecanoe County Health Commission up at Purdue, and the Monroe County Health folks down in Bloomington, everybody came together and pulled this off. And one last thing, and I'm going to get back to what you said. Man, I was downtown. The fans were unbelievable. It wasn't like a normal Final Four, but it was the same enthusiasm with a much smaller group. So congratulations to everybody. Seth, I was at the game, and when I saw that first possession, I thought to myself, Gonzaga, you have a serious problem. I really did, and I know exactly what you're saying. Gonzaga came to play, but there was a determination on that first possession, Seth, that was uncommon. And it set the tone, I think, for the rest of the game, and it never slowed down. Seth, I think this, tell me what you think. I think when you come out so aggressive and you're just balling like that, that's when shots go in.
Yeah.
Baylor, to me, had no nerves in this game. And I think you saw that on the first possession, the one you're talking about. They had no nerves. They were going to play the way they play. They were going to attack. Nobody was worried about getting in foul trouble by going over the back or being too aggressive. They were like, man, we're getting after this. We're getting after it tough. And they did. And that, I agree. I could not agree more. That first possession was something. All right. Defensively, Seth, and throughout the first, let's just go the first 10 minutes. Davion Mitchell, I was watching Kispert. He couldn't breathe against him. And I'm telling you, Seth, I don't have a chart on this. You know, coaches chart deflections. I don't know what a great number of deflections is in the first 5-10 minutes of the game, but whatever it is, they had it. They got their hands on so many passes with hand activity and aggressiveness, Seth. It literally put Gonzaga, I feel like, on their heels from the jump offensively, and that's a great offensive team.
Yeah, like I look at Baylor's defense, and I used to always have a saying, ball pressure buys time. So, like, we talked about the flow of Gonzaga, all right, and how good a cutting team they were and how the ball moves and doesn't get stuck and all those things that you want to – you hear about good offense. Ball pressure buys time. You can be open, but if someone's up and in you, pressuring the ball, tracing the ball, getting you to turn your back, you know what? I don't care how open you are. If your offense is pushed one step further out, people say, what's one step? One step's an eternity in a game of basketball. That entry pass to the post is a step longer. So now all of a sudden people can shrink in and get a hand on the ball and dig down. One step's further because now those step-in threes are a little bit further. One step's further because now even if you start your drive and you beat, your help can be a little bit earlier, and now your recovery is a little bit shorter. Like, ball pressure buys time. I'm serious. As I was watching the first probably 10, 15 minutes, like, I could hear myself talking to my team before a game, like saying, we're going to get up and underneath them. I used to have the thing, we're going to get into them. We're going to get into the ball because ball pressure buys time. If you want to help your guy, your teammates, let's get pressure on the basketball. If you want to help that post defender, let's get pressure on the basketball. Because if I pressure the ball and now Drew Timmy's forced to step one further step out on a duck in or on a post up, that's a big difference. Because now he almost has become a perimeter player. And that's, to me, what it did. The versatility of the defense, the ability to switch was great. But to me, ball pressure buys time. And that, when we're just talking the defense, that was incredible. But on the other end, I thought that Scott Drew, because Gonzaga was switching, he just created the matchup he wanted. He went after Kispert. It was almost unfair. I mean, he created matchups on Kispert and just went after him and went after him and went after him. And then when he went to that small lineup and they could spread you a little bit, he went to all that middle ball screen where you had to stay home on all those three-point shooters. And then it was lobs and layups. I got sound effects today.
You did really good ones too. You know, the Kispert thing, I give to scouting, because you and I talked after the UCLA game. Jaime Jaquez was able to drive Kispert, yep, and drive him and get in the lane and get where he wanted. And I think that the staff of Baylor saw that. And I think that they said, all right, we're quicker. We'll go at Kispert. You know, you talked about this. You talked about Gonzaga's offense, and it was the best in the country. But let's look at what Baylor's offense did. You know, let's look at their overall shooting. Seth, all right, they shot 45%, which is pretty good. Shot 44% from the three. Shot 90%, 89% from the two. Had 18 assists and only 9 turnovers. When you look across the board statistically, That's pretty efficient offense in a national championship game. When they went to a zone, Gonzaga, the middle was filled, I think, by Teague. Shots were made. Whatever was happening with Gonzaga's defense, whatever they decided to do, there was a quick answer. It wasn't like, oh, crap, they're in a zone. Let's look over to Coach Drew and see what the hell we're supposed to do. It was boom, 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 middle, shot. It was a clinic.
Yeah, and you know what I loved about the zone offense? They had multiple guys in the middle.
All
playmakers.
Yes.
They came behind the defense, came up in it. They didn't get it. They vacated. Next guy came in and filled behind. All of a sudden, eventually, and when they had that the guy in the dunker spot behind, that flat in the middle of the zone just a little bit, and Teague was, I mean, he was the back. We've said it all season long. The backcourt of Baylor was the best in the country. All right, and they validated it in that game. Whether it was Adam Flagler coming off the bench, you're like, bam, bam, bam. Whether it's Teague in the middle of the zone, whether it's Davion Mitchell making plays, whether it's Jared Butler, who started the tournament, struggled shooting, and then made big play after big play, was the most outstanding player in the tournament. I just thought Scott Drew's team was so ready. And, you know, we'd be remiss in not talking about UCLA. And I know I'm getting off tangent, but what Mick Cronin did with that team, you lose Chris Smith, you lose the Hill kid, a shot blocker, and he figured out a way to put guys in positions to play to their strengths. He exploited matchups. He got a team that I thought early in the season could not defend. Tiger Campbell could not. I remember texting Mick after watching Tiger Campbell early in the season and going, dude, that's the worst on-ball defender I've ever seen you have at the point of attack. And yeah, true story, he told me he brought Tiger in January. I said, look, I'm going to have to go get another point guard if you can't guard the ball. You can guard the ball, but you're not guarding the ball. That's got to be a priority for you. That's got to be something that's important to you. You've got to be able to sit in a stance, be physical, be tough, not meld on screens, get over screens, don't get screened off the ball. And you got to guard the ball, because if you can't guard the ball, our defense is screwed. That kid, dude, I mean, that kid just competed. That team, you could tell that team, players, players coach, players, and everyone in the group pulling in the same direction.
You know, I've said this 15 times on this. The Hawkins family stayed with me, and parents pulling in the same direction. Now, I didn't get with them until they got to the Elite Eight Final Four, right? So there's a big difference, you know, between early in the season. But I'm telling you, and it was a little bit of a lesson for me, not only with the Hawkins, but a couple other families came over for a barbecue, and man, everybody in the same direction on Mick. I'm not going to say they were on the same direction when Mick got there, because who is with a new coach?
Yeah.
And so if you're out there and your team has a new coach, and, you know, just I'm really paying attention to what's happening at Indiana, because I'm here and because Woody's new and the direction seems to be going. But it is so important. Brad Stevens and I had a conversation one time after he went to his second championship game, and he said, Dan, I'm telling you, everybody in the building has to be pulling in the same direction. You can't have janitors telling players, oh, man, you should be playing more. You can't have anybody, because everybody has an opinion when you're good. You know, when you're good, everybody wants to feel like they're a part of it. And I felt like UCLA's group had that. I watched the celebration of Baylor. The joy that they had is obvious when you win a national championship, but you could kind of feel, and this was very odd. No, it's not very odd. I misspoke there. It's not very odd. You could kind of see the real love between the players and Scott Drew and the entire staff. That staff's been together a while. And again, you talk about pulling in the same direction. I know it's easy when you're in the Final Four. I get it when you're having success. But it's also one of the main reasons you do have success. So, Seth, I'm also let's give Calvin Sampson a shout out. Here's what I don't like about really sports. Getting to the Final Four is a hang the banner lifetime achievement. I don't care if you're a coach, an assistant coach, a grad assistant, a manager, a player, for everybody, it is. And then when you get beat in the Final Four, you become forgotten, and people almost go, well, you know, they didn't win it all. No. Getting to a Final Four is absolutely an incredible accomplishment that's to be celebrated regardless of what happens in the damn semifinal game. Calvin Sampson got Houston their first time since, what, 84?
Yep.
It ain't easy, folks, That's why you're seeing a lot of first time since with Houston, or excuse me, with Houston and with Baylor. So, hey, look, they got beat. What the hell are you going to do? You get beat. You're playing good teams. But getting there is a hell of a thing for Sampson, hell of a thing for that entire Houston basketball community. And I don't think we should lose sight of that.
And they're not going anywhere either because he's found a formula. Local, bounce backs, rebound, defend, play with the chip. And you know that sounds easy, but you know what? If you're a Texas kid and you want to go back home, where are you going? If you if you're a transfer, like the transfer, like I look at Gonzaga and I look at Houston and I look at Baylor, they're not going to recruit in the transfer portal. All right, they're going to select in the transfer portal. They've separated themselves in terms of this transfer portal. Yeah, I mean Kentucky will be involved and maybe North Carolina will get involved and things of that nature. Dan, there was a time people said Scott Drew couldn't coach. There was a time that people said Scott Drew was over his head. And let me tell you something. One thing about Scott Drew, and obviously Homer Drew and obviously Bryce, but you know, the dad being the matriarch of the Drew family, that dude never has a bad day. From the day he took his press conference to getting whooped by 100 points when he was playing with walk-ons, have you ever talked to Scott Drew where he didn't say where he wasn't upbeat and enthusiastic? He embraces every day. He's the most upbeat dude in America. It's almost sickening. I mean, especially when you compare him to you and I. But I mean, like his enthusiasm for what he's doing, like competing is not a burden. Getting his team ready is not a burden. He never seems tired. He never gets down. He just moves one step in front of the other. Like his enthusiasm, his attitude permeates through his team. His enthusiasm and his joy in what he's doing, like I know a lot of coaches with everything that's going on with the transfer portal and NIL and the COVID situation and everything else, they can get snarky. They can get down. They can get disappointed. They can, get sideways. I've never heard that from him. I've never heard it from him. And I listened to his press conference when he got the job again yesterday, when he says, he doesn't want to make the NCAA tournament. He wants to get to a point where we're winning games in the NCAA tournament and competing for championships. He had a vision. And 18 years later, that vision became a reality. But during the course of that, it was 18 years, maybe privately, but I've never seen the guy beaten down by the profession. I've never seen him beaten down by losing. I've never seen him beaten down by all the static, as you know, and you and I know, static that surrounds being a head coach in college basketball. What do you think?
I agree with you. I mean, I even yesterday I texted him, congratulations, and then of course, hey, you want to come on my show, right? Got back to me and he's coming on the show at noon. I mean, he is literally that guy. And I give him a lot of credit. 18 years ago, he took over a job that was the lowest ever. Like he had a murder team ever. I mean, it was not. And from a basketball side of it, you hit on what Scott is better than I could. So I'm going to let that go and just agree with everything you just said. From a basketball side of it, Seth, I felt like this for a long time. I felt like over, and I'm not going to pretend to say I followed Scott when I was a head coach and he was starting at Baylor. I didn't. I mean, I was doing my own thing. But when I got out in 08 and I started broadcasting and started paying attention to the broader scope of college basketball, one of the things that I've always thought about Scott Drew as a basketball coach is he and John Beilein did the best job of evaluating talent of anybody I've seen in college basketball. Look, let's be honest. You get Zion Williamson. Everybody knows Zion Williamson, right? I mean, Tweety Carter going back to the – I mean, I don't know all the names, but I know this. Over the course of time, he's always had the right players for his team. He's always had athletic guys that can really play that came from basically nowhere. And we've documented where all the players are coming. There's transfers and there's kids. Okay, fine. But they and their staff, Scott and his staff, I believe this, along with John Beilein, when John was doing it, I thought John was tremendous. They've done the best job. They find guys from everywhere. And you're looking at it going, wait a second, where'd that guy come from? Whoa. He was supposed to go to Alabama. Next thing you know, they just have been very, very good. In fact, not very good. They've been great and the best in the country. And it's not going to stop. And he's not going anywhere.
Maceo Teague, Asheville. Adam Flagler, Presbyterian. Obviously, Davion Mitchell, Auburn. Freddie Gillespie a year ago, Division III, I think. Yeah. Tweety Carter, you just said. You look at the makeup of this team, and he's getting guys that love ball, have skills, floor gamers, competitive, and buy in. Because, you know, like, we used to talk about Jay Wright, good, better, best. You know, give up a good shot to get a better shot to get the best shot. And as I'm watching Baylor play, you know, I just used to say, make one more. They make one more. Like, boom, make one more. Like, you got something, boom, make one more. I say that one more gets you more good shots than you realize. And that team, there was zero, like, you had three ridiculous guards on the court. Sometimes for that team never played with an ego. That team, I never felt like one guy was chasing it. Now, when you got three guards that good, right, ego is a hard thing to manage. Static around good players who are worrying about the league is a hard thing to manage. And he managed it. Those players handled it seamlessly. All right, last thing before we go, because I think it's important. Gonzaga, historic season. What Gonzaga did this season was so good for college basketball. We had something to follow. They were chasing, obviously, 1976. They were chasing a perfect season. They were an incredible basketball team. The ball move, the cutting, the speed in which – I mean, they play. They got a shot up every 14 seconds, yet they only turned it over 15% of their possessions. Kispert and his ability to make shots, play without the ball. Jalen Suggs embracing the moment with obviously that great shot, but other tremendous plays. The development of Drew Timmy and the joy and the fun he had playing. Joel Ayayi. All right, and just how he, again, a guy that gave up a little bit of himself, probably somewhere else he could average 20 a game. You know, Watson coming off the bench, who's going to be a really good player. Nebhard fitting in after transferring from Florida, the job that Mark does, and we know Mark's fiercely competitive, but what a season. And, like, I go back to this. They played, like, 9 straight road games in the league this year, all right? What a season in terms of, and maybe this is a good way to culminate, we didn't think we were going to make it through the season. We didn't know if we were going to play games. We didn't know if we were going to have championship, like you said earlier. We had games delayed. We had guys scheduling games, you know, and playing 2 days later. We had guys scheduling games on Twitter. I mean, think about that. Hey, Dan, looking for a golf game. You want to play tomorrow? Yeah, okay, let's go. I mean, think about that. But for the journey Gonzaga had, which I thought helped, it gave us something to kind of be riveting to the players, the coaches, the administrators, the commissioners, the officials, the people that helped clean the buildings, people that fed the players throughout the season to their door a lot of times, to the pregame meals, to the Zoom meetings, to the to Zoom classes, to the uncertainty. I look at it and I spent a good part of the season kind of just maybe, you know, and I'm sure you did it. Like, if I was coaching right now, how would I handle this? Mm-hmm. Like, all right, how would I handle the uncertainty? Yep. How would I handle getting a game canceled? How would I handle arriving in a city and then all of a sudden realizing, like happened to Michigan State, you get to Charlottesville and the game's canceled? How would I feel 3 straight weeks knowing your team's in quarantine like Scott Drew did in the middle of the season? It was incredible. Having said that, it's incredible. Man, I look for the day I can get into it, go to a game. I look forward to the day I can go to watch practice. Like, I missed what I love watching practice, going to watch practice. All the things that we took for granted. And this is the last thing I'll say. I hope at the end of this, the perspective of the things we took for granted in our lives that we just have the freedom to do in our country and in the way we live, we have a better appreciation for. A perspective of just the everyday things we did, and then finally the appreciation of all the brilliant people that work harder than anyone to find a vaccine, put in our arms to give us our lives back as we knew it.
All right. Well said. Very well said. I want to clap for you. My dog's barking for you. That was so well said back there.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening all season. We're not going anywhere. We're going to have a podcast every week. Go to wherever you get your podcast and rate us. And there's only one rating.
It's the world's greatest podcast. I mean, well, come on. It's the world's greatest podcast. What are you going to rate it? I mean, come on.
Part of our summer series will be an update on the occasional golf between me and him. And I just want to state publicly before we go away that I'm going to kick the living out of Seth Greenberg.
Oh, no, the new irons, baby.
16,
the new driver.
At the Greenbrier. Have a good day, everybody. Go NCAA.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.